You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with co-host Josh Newman. Josh, we are in the month of November, or as some people call it, the second day of Christmas. Is that how we're going with this?
Man, yeah. It seems like, look, I don't celebrate Christmas as an upstanding Jew, but I've always been like kind of infatuated by Christmas and Christmas season. And, you know, I've dated women who, you know, celebrate Christmas. So I was always like sort of into Christmas and, you know, living in New Jersey and going up to New York and seeing the tree at Rockefeller Center. So I'm like always looking forward to Christmas, but I don't look forward to Christmas at the expense of skipping right over Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people that want to skip Thanksgiving entirely, and I'm not about that.
See, I'm all about food, so any holiday that celebrates food, I'm all in. I was listening to the radio yesterday, and the radio guy was just like, "And welcome to Mariah season," and instantly starts playing Mariah Carey. So. And this wasn't, you know, Mariah Carey pop superstar. This was Mariah Carey, obviously, Christmas. So I don't know. I know there's a lot of people that the second Halloween ends, they've got all of their decorations down and they've got the Christmas tree up and everything. And it's a little crazy to me. I get it. I understand the magic behind it, but it's whatever. So if you're celebrating Christmas right now, good for you.
But you know what I really can't stand is like you walk in Costco.
Oh yeah.
And Costco had Christmas stuff up like late September. You started seeing Christmas stuff. And you know, it's funny, my son who's almost 2 is walking around now, and if we're in Costco and we put him down, he will beeline right to the Christmas tree because he's like infatuated by the lights and he's playing with the fake not leaves. What does a pine tree have?
Pine needles.
Pine needles. God, I need more coffee. But yeah, so anyway.
This isn't helping your wife's cause for wanting to buy a Christmas tree, by the way.
She's been infatuated with Christmas too. Like this is actually kind of funny. She grew up in a Jewish home and they were like pretty seriously into religion when she was a young girl. She didn't know when Christmas was. She knew what Christmas was.
Sure.
She didn't know that it was December 25th. Until she was like 11.
Okay.
And since then, she's also been sort of infatuated with Christmas. So, you know, what's the old Adam Sandler half comedy, half song? Like a lonely Jew on Christmas? That's what we are. We're lonely Jews on Christmas.
One of the greatest songs of all time, I have to say.
Amazing.
All right, well, let's talk real football stuff. I don't think people came here to listen to our Christmas takes, but you know, we'll give them. We gave them pumpkin spice takes last time. We'll give them Christmas takes this time. So, I do have to ask: are you a peppermint guy?
Yeah, I do. I do enjoy peppermint. What are you shaking your head at?
It's gross.
What's wrong?
See, like I feel like we're on opposite ends of this now. Like you like pumpkin spice, you like peppermint, and I'm just like, ugh.
I mean, I like candy canes. I like peppermint bark. If somebody wants to make some and send it over to my place in Sugar House, peppermint coffee, peppermint creamer. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no. Dude. Yeah.
Give me the caramels. I'll take the caramels. That one's different.
That's crazy because I don't like caramels.
Yes.
So like polar opposites. I love it.
We're gonna have a little TV sitcom where you and I live together, but we hate the same things, and so we'll just like take whatever each other doesn't want.
That's fantastic. We're going to have to make this like an off-season episode of the podcast where we just try to compare things and see what we actually agree on.
Oh, food tasting. I like that. I'm good with this.
Done.
I'm sure we could be Instagram famous with that too. That's probably a good strategy for us. Probably get paid more than what we're doing now. So
I was going to say I could use the money these days. Anyway.
Anyways. All right. Let's talk football. And let's jump. Instead of jumping right to the Arizona State game that Utah has Saturday, although that is a big game for them, obviously, because they need to get back on the winning ways, we're going to jump to the Big 12. It's coming in a year. Utah obviously is moving to the Big 12. And yesterday, which was Wednesday, the Big 12 released its scheduling matrix, basically listed the next four seasons and who the home and away opponents are, kind of giving a look at kind of how their scheduling is going to be. We don't know exact dates yet. We just know the home and road opponents for Utah. It's a little bit interesting, and there's a lot that we can talk about this. First off, though, that BYU-Utah rivalry is a protected series, so they will play every single year. It's one of four protected rivalries that the Big 12 has established. So you've got that. And then you've got also this Baylor game, which is a non-conference game next year. It will stay a non-conference game. BYU's will move to a conference game, but Utah essentially plays 10 conference games next year. So it'll be a little bit different, and you know, it's not something that I think is giving Utah too much heartburn, but it is something that is there. But overall, you know, it's an interesting setup. Any overall impressions from you based on kind of what you saw from that scheduling announcement?
Yeah, no, certainly I think we all could have assumed that Utah-BYU would be a protected rivalry and they're going to play every year, just like Arizona and Arizona State in the Territorial Cup, they're going to play every year. So I don't think any of this was like super duper surprising. I think we had both individually sort of caught wind that the Baylor game, which would have been the return game in the home and home, will remain a non-conference game. And Mark Harlan, you know, the AD at Utah, sort of alluded to that a month or two ago. Look, it wasn't going to be perfect at the beginning because, look, college football scheduling is very hard, and trying to find non-conference games at late dates is a very hard thing to do. So now, instead of needing to find two non-conference games, you just make Baylor, you know, you keep Baylor a non-conference game, and then now you need one non-conference game. So, you know, I wasn't super duper surprised at that. You know, there's one thing that you know, did mention on our script here, which I did not even think of, did not even realize. Utah was scheduled to play Houston in a home and home in 26 and 27. Utah and Houston are obviously now Big 12 foes. So that kind of just got rolled into the regular schedule. But instead of 26 and 27, it's 24 at Houston and it's 26 at Utah. So again, you know, nothing like super duper surprising, and it wasn't going to be perfect, but hey, you know, there's a schedule and there's things to look forward to. You know, you've certainly got, you know, I saw a good number of fans on social media kind of, you know, pondering, hey, like which road venues do I want to see? Obviously, this is it's going to be a new thing for Utah football, but it's also a new thing for the fan base. People get to travel new places. It's a new thing for you and I, right? Getting to travel to new places. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about this for a while. Like, you're in the middle of a season now and you have to concentrate on the season you're playing now, but off in the distance, you know, the program and even the media and some of the fans are certainly thinking about the future and maybe even starting to make some plans for the future.
Yeah, and kind of going back to that Houston game, obviously there was a game contract for that, for a home-and-home for non-conference games. I have asked officially on that what kind of happened with that, and honestly, there's not really an answer right now, or at least one that works, and so it ultimately doesn't matter because it has been transformed into a conference game, but it is interesting to see what will happen with that, if there's any ramifications from a contract. I doubt it for those that are interested in that kind of stuff, but it is interesting that that's how it is. They did keep the same pairing in the sense that they will go to Houston at first, and then Utah will get the back end of that home and home, even though now it's a conference game. So they didn't change anything with it necessarily, other than they gave it different years. Obviously, 26 and 27 was what it was scheduled. It's now 24 and then 26, so a little different that way. But from my vantage point, there we go. I don't know what I'm saying. Words words are clearly not coming to me today. Anyways, from the scheduling, I look at it and I don't. Look, you know, this is going to probably get picked up by somebody and they're probably going to like lambast me over it, but I don't see this as a very difficult schedule for Utah. Like,
I said the same thing yesterday.
If we're looking at it based on the teams this year, right? Like, look, Arizona is going to be tough. They're still going to continue. BYU is going to be a tough game. Outside of that, there's good teams. Don't get me wrong. Like, TCU is going to be better. Colorado, if Deion Sanders stays there, I guarantee you he's going to have a better team. Oklahoma State's good. You know, there's going to be tough games on the schedule, it's just not the same, right? Like, and that's not a shot at the Big Ten or Big 12. It is a big shot at the Big Ten. You know, we're coming after them. No, but it's not a shot at that. It's just the nature of what it is, right? Like, you've got a lot of leftover teams, Utah included, that are now kind of coming together as a entity of 16 teams that are trying to make the best of what has happened in conference realignment, right? And so Utah, at this standing, they have a very great opportunity to be able to at least make a college football playoff push, right? Like, they've always made that push in terms of talking about it and wanting it to be their focal point. Next year, it shifts into hyperdrive. Obviously, it's a 12-team playoff, so that allows Utah to be able to be in a much better spot. But I think even with this schedule, even with it 10 conference games, essentially, this is a very favorable schedule for Utah if everything works, right? Like, Utah, we don't know what their roster or personnel is going to look like. Is Rising coming back? Is Keithy coming back? All that stuff is still on the table. But all things being considered, this is tough. To me, like, what is your toughest road game? Is it Oklahoma State? Is it Houston? UCF, just because you're going across the country? I mean, I don't see necessarily that. And consider me as being ignorant to this. I don't know what these venues are going to be like, right? Like, going to the Pac-12, I understand what it takes to go to Arizona or Arizona State and how difficult those venues can be. I don't know what it's going to be like going to Oklahoma State. So there is a little bit of ignorance on my side just simply because I don't know. But I can't foresee, based on scheduling on paper, where the difficulty comes in terms of, oh no, like, Utah's in for a world of hurt right here.
You know, we have to, again, reiterate that, you know, I said yesterday that upon first glance, it looked like a pretty soft schedule for Utah next year. You are echoing that sentiment. But again, this is on paper in the middle of this season. We don't know what Rising is doing. We don't know what Brand Keithy is doing. We don't know anything really about the personnel for Utah going into 24 in terms of, you know, does Cole Bishop go to the NFL draft? Guys hitting the portal. We just don't know yet. So in a vacuum, this is a pretty soft schedule for Utah. Now, you're talking about the toughest road game. I agree with you. UCF, I don't know, but look, you're traveling two time zones. You're going to travel on Thursday for a Saturday game. That's a thing. Going to Oklahoma State, I've read and I've been told by colleagues and people that it's a tough place to play. Okay. Houston, I'm not really buying that. Look, you have to play BYU. That's going to be a war, like it always is, no pun intended. And, you know, we'll see what happens here. But again, you know, in a vacuum, you're looking at this schedule and you're looking at it through the lens, mostly through the lens of this season and this team, and trying to project what 24 looks like. It's a very manageable schedule. And again, you need one more non-conference game. You've got Southern Utah as the opener. You've got Baylor, again, as you've said, you're essentially playing 10 Big 12 games, but that Baylor game is non-conference, so you need another non-conference game. There are some rumblings about what that might be. I will say that I expect that third non-conference game to not be anything crazy.
No.
And that is going to be a team that Utah should be, will be. That's what that third game is going
to
be.
Yeah, it has to be a lower-level G5 team, in my opinion, especially since you have 10.
Yeah.
10 conference games, essentially. You know, you can't
G5 without question.
Yeah, well, you can't schedule another FCS team. So
no, you're not playing 11 Power 5 teams in year one of the Big 12. I can promise you, everybody, that is not going to happen. And you have some people like, oh, maybe they'll schedule Oregon. Maybe they'll schedule, like,
no,
they're not scheduling Oregon. They're not scheduling USC. They're not even scheduling Oregon State or Washington State for that third spot. They're going to schedule at best a group of five team. Maybe one that we've all heard of. We'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and I don't think it has to be anything crazy, right? Like, you're trying to pencil in some wins, even though you look at this schedule and you think that you're okay. I mean, the thing about this schedule is you're going to face three of the incoming four teams from this season, right? So teams that are here in the Big 12 for their first year this year. BYU is always going to be a tough game, regardless of what's happening.
Right.
That game's going to change because now it means something to both of these programs. So I don't know if that changes it one way or the other, or maybe the intensity is a little bit more. I mean, it's always been an intense game, so I don't know that it can be any much bigger. But you're also getting Houston, you're getting UCF. Those two teams, they haven't done very well. UCF is, I mean, they've been okay. They've always been in the kind of the mix, and they just haven't been on the lucky side of being able to get wins this season. But you've got teams that are really struggling to acclimate to the Power 5 level. We knew this was going to happen. It happened for Utah. This isn't a surprise. It's going to take a few years for those teams to be able to do that. So if you have three teams, and I'll casually kind of throw BYU in there, even though I don't feel that they're going to be in that same spot as a Houston or UCF, they're still going to have the same climb as them. This still is a very advantageous spot for Utah because they've got teams that aren't familiar with the Big 12 as much as Utah is. If, you know what I mean? They're going to be in a very similar spot. It's just they have one more year ahead of them. They're also acclimating from a G5 to a P5 or whatever the designation is going to be called moving forward. It doesn't feel like a very difficult schedule for Utah. You know, that should be good things in the sense that, you know, you get an opportunity to, on paper, compete for a college football playoff in year one, assuming that everything goes as planned. But also that can become a very difficult task for Utah because you kind of overlook a lot of these teams, right? You're not playing Oregon. You're not playing Washington or USC. You're not even playing Florida for that matter, right? Like, there's not a lot of these big-time games that you're used to, or at least in your head are used to. Oklahoma State's going to be a big game. They're going to be a tough test, right? Like, this is going to be a hard game. I think it's just shifting that mindset of how this is going to be and changing it in a way that is going to kind of be advantageous for Utah. So we'll see. Obviously, this is going to be, you know, we're going to have a lot of discussion on this, and there's going to be a lot of looking at this, especially as the dates are released and we find out how it all comes in. I mean, there's trap games here. There's, you know, injuries once again can take a factor. If Utah doesn't have a quarterback worth its salt, I mean, that's not going to help. And Utah's going to be in a very similar situation. So there's a lot at play here, but at least you have to like what Utah's got moving into the Big 12.
Yeah. And just the last point I'll make on this, and this probably is not a big deal in this day and age of chartered flights and pretty rigid schedules, but like, let's not completely discount the fact that, like, yeah, you're traveling to new places. Like, you've never, like, Kyle has never taken his team to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and dealing with that airport, dealing with that hotels, whatever restaurants, whatever game day schedule there is. Look, it ultimately, it's all the same. Like, you're getting on a plane, you're going to a destination, you're having your meetings in the hotel, your walkthrough, whatever. Again, probably not a thing, but if we're trying to find things to, you know, nitpick or worry about, yeah, you know, you're going to new destinations. You're going to Stillwater. You're going to Houston. You know, in the future, just like BYU this weekend, like you'll go to Morgantown and you'll go to Fort Worth. So, you know, just something to keep in mind as you look at the schedule and, you know, whether or not you agree with us that it's pretty soft, just keep in mind that there are new machinations to how Utah operates just because you're going to places that you've never been.
And from a fan perspective, you know, you want to look at those home games, right? Are these exciting games that are going to bring you into the stadium? You obviously get BYU, it's just going to turn people in. TCU is, regardless of what TCU is, I think that game is going to be one that people are going to look at as like kind of a redemption slash this is an old budding rivalry that they had back in the Mountain West days.
Oh, that's going to be obnoxious. So it's, you think, you're probably right.
Yeah, so I don't know that TCU is necessarily, you know, we don't know where TCU is going to be, but I think there's still some stuff left over from the Mountain West days. We're not that far removed from it, so there will be at least some stuff. Iowa State, I don't know that that's going to necessarily draw a ton, but I think that's the factor that's going to change this, right? Like, does this change the season ticket holders at Utah because they're looking at these and they don't like it? I don't know, right? Like, Utah's been ticking up every single year in how many tickets they've been selling for season tickets, and you know, they're touting standing room only as giving them a lot of different things that way and being able to improve attendance. And I don't know. I think these are just new things that we're going to have to look at moving forward as this changes.
Yeah, I will be curious. You know, I'm thinking as you're talking, I will be curious to hear what the retention rate is for 24 season tickets. Now, look, the retention rate at Utah has been, at least since I've been here, it's been very high, you know, 98%, 95%. I think coming out of the COVID year when there was still some uncertainty going into 21, that was still like a mid-90s retention rate. And you would expect it to be high again, because no matter what conference they're in, no matter who they're playing, like, people want to watch Utah football. And if the retention rate were to go down, no matter how much it goes down, the waiting list for season tickets is still believed to be in the thousands.
Yeah.
So either way, you're going to sell out next year's home slate. It's just, yeah, I'd be curious to see, you know, what the retention rate is for 24 come springtime, when that number usually gets released.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real worry that this is all of a sudden Rice Eccles is going to be a ghost town or anything like that.
No,
like,
not at all.
Any fan decrying that on Twitter or anything like that, it's not going to happen, right? Like, Rice Eccles will continue to be sold out, or at least reported sellouts based on tickets sold. We know
tickets distributed, quote unquote.
We have seen the stadium at times, but either way, I mean, this will be an interesting nuance, but Utah's going to develop new rivalries with a lot of these teams. They're going to enjoy some fun with it. It's going to change, but I think you're going to be fine, right? Like, I think it's just a new situation. You just don't understand it yet, but it'll be fun. So let's not beat a dead horse here. We'll talk about this obviously a lot moving forward, but transitioning to what happened this week, the first college football playoff rankings were released. This is nothing crazy or shattering. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this. Utah comes in at 18 in the initial rankings. Crazy, though, they are the seventh most ranked team in the college football playoff era. They have 42 times that they've been ranked. I mean, they're up there with the Alabamas, the Clemsons. Those two have only been, Alabama and Ohio State have been ranked every single time.
Every time, yeah.
But outside of that, I mean, they are ranked with the Blue Bloods. Nobody's calling Utah Blue Blood by any mean, but the fact that they've been able to be in the college football playoff rankings 42 times says a lot of what Kyle Whittingham has been able to do over the last few years. So, you know, it's not anything earth-shattering, and it's not anything that, you know, we need to spend a ton of time on, but the fact that Utah's there means something. Once again, six teams from the Pac-12 are ranked. Anything from your end that you feel like, you know, about the college football playoff rankings, where we're at right now?
Yeah, no, not specifically from a Utah vantage point, but two things. I don't think anybody believes that Ohio State is the number one team in the country, the best team in the country,
yeah.
But they have the best resume for now, and that's what it's based on. The best resume goes to Ohio State. So for now, Ohio State is number one, knowing that you still have you have to go to Michigan to end the regular season. And then from a Pac-12 perspective, we've talked forever about how the Pac-12 keeps getting shut out of the college football playoff, and, you know, teams can't break through. Well, Washington is five and Oregon is six, and I think a lot of us think that Oregon is the better team than Washington right now, but Washington has that head-to-head win, so that'll be interesting to see how everybody moves forward, right? Like, Washington and Oregon still have to play USC, so there are potholes still to go, but we are, you know, slowly moving to a point where if Washington and Oregon win out and face off in the Pac-12 championship game on December 1st, we could see a scenario where the winner is going to the college football playoff and the loser probably still gets into the New Year's Six, but like, wow, like what a scene that would be, okay? With the backdrop of the Pac-12 dying and going away, you have a college football playoff elimination game in the Pac-12 championship game, and Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas will be full.
Oh, yeah.
Because those are two fan bases that travel anyway, then consider what the stakes would be. Like, you and I have obviously covered the last two Pac-12 championship games, and the scene at Allegiant, especially last year when USC was in kind of a win and in scenario for the CFP, that building was alive and electric.
It was electric.
And it was electric last year. And I would think that it would be exponentially more electric if you had Washington and Oregon playing with that much at stake.
Well, especially as a rivalry, right? Like, those two hate each other.
Yeah,
like,
the I-5 rivalry.
That,
yeah.
I mean, Utah, you can say what you want about Utah and Arizona. What the heck is my problem, man? Utah and USC, you know, and being a rivalry. I'm just going to end the podcast right now and call it a day, but
I'll finish up.
Finish up for us. You know, that was a pretty electric place, and obviously that's crazy. But those two fan bases going after each other and in an all, you know, high stakes situation is pretty remarkable. I will say, with Oregon, I got the sense that they were this close to making Oregon jump Washington. I really think the way that they talked about it Boo Kerrigan has a little presser with media afterward, and it sounded like they kind of were on the edge. They were teetering a little bit, and at the end of the day, Washington won out because they have the win. But Don't be surprised if, you know, if the results kind of continue the same way that they have, where Oregon continues to dominate and Washington is squeaking by, if that changes things, if Oregon all of a sudden jumps them. But look, we're still a few weeks out from where this is at. Regardless, you know, the Pac-12 is in playoff contention. I think it's a good thing, barring, you know, all chaos happening and Utah gets to the Pac-12 championship again and ruining everybody's spot. I think this is a good year for the Pac-12 to be able to get a spot. It happens to be the two teams that have been the only two teams to make it to the playoffs for the Pac-12. So kind of an interesting dynamic there. I think that's kind of what's at play, but nothing too earth shattering there. So
no, be watching. Not yet, anyway.
No, not yet. All right. Well, let's jump into actual Utah football for this season. We're not talking about next year. We're not talking about practice. We're talking about games. I'm sorry. We're gonna move forward. Anyway, so let's kind of jump back a little bit to Monday and what Kyle Whittingham's talked about with a few things. And the first I want to kind of talk about is Sione Vaki. We've seen, obviously, in two games where he was electric and he was a really dynamic player for Utah, where he was able to do a ton for the offense and allowed Utah to really kind of take the next step forward, especially with kind of where they've been with the quarterback play and where they've been from an offense in general. But Oregon scouted Vaki very well. We talked about it last podcast and basically nullified him in a lot of respects. He had five touches on the offensive side of the ball. He was under the weather, so you know Kyle said that kind of played into a little bit of what he was not able to do. But there was a lot of talk of maybe they move Vaki over probably full-time on offense and maybe put him sporadically on defense. But that shifted a little bit Monday. Josh, what did Kyle say about that, and kind of what should we make of that?
Yeah, after USC, Kyle was at least open to moving Sione Vaki full-time to offense, and that's how dynamic he was. Like, that's how much he was doing for an offense that had like loads of trouble before Vaki showed up on offense for the Cal game. But now, you know, Kyle has kind of walked that back a little bit. You know, with four regular season games to go, everybody is pretty much settled into their roles, and that includes Vaki. You know, Kyle put it at a 70-30 split moving forward for Vaki. That's 70% defense, 30% offense. And one question I wish I had asked on Monday, why is objectively your best offensive player only getting 30% of the snaps?
Yeah.
That doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I wish I'd asked that. There's still time to ask that. So I don't know. He kind of seemed to turn on a dime. Again, he wasn't like super duper firm on the full-time move to offense, but he was at least open to it. And then a week later, he was pretty closed to it. So look, we'll see what happens. Okay. He only had five touches, all rushes against Oregon. Oregon had that wheel route stuff pretty well defended. So now we'll see what happens against Arizona State. But like, I think what we can be sure of, what we can agree on, is that Utah's offense is better with Sione Vaki on that side of the ball. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was a little taken back by his comments on that on Monday, just because they were leaning heavily into Vaki being on offense a large amount of the time, right? Like I expected him. Maybe not a 50-50 split or anything like that, and maybe 70-30 is probably still appropriate based on what they want to use, but I also wouldn't take what he says as gospel truth, right? Like, I think this is something where they're going to look at it situationally, and maybe it is more 70-30 against Arizona State because they feel like they can do more. Maybe if they go against Washington, it flips a little bit, and, you know, he's playing a little bit more. I just think, like you said, he is clearly one of their best players on offense, and so to not have him on that side of the ball at least a good chunk of the time does a disservice to the offense. And I understand the offense has to work it out, right? Like, they've got to figure out stuff for them. They've got to have Jaquindon Jackson or Jalen Glover. They've got to get Devon Bailey involved, Mikey Matthews. I mean, this season has been kind of a weird season where you get one guy that does something, right? Like, last week against Oregon, Kyle really praised Devon Bailey. He said it was one of his best games, kind of a breakout game for him this season. And it's true, he did have a great game. But, like, there hasn't been a consistent arc throughout this season of somebody outside of maybe Vaki for two games. One game, you know, Jaquindon Jackson's rushing for 150 yards or so. Even then, it was kind of quiet because there was other things taking away from that. You had Mikey Matthews. You've had Munir McLean at different times. Like, there hasn't been one consistent player on offense that has allowed Utah to kind of have stability. And in some respects, that's good that you're getting a lot of different playmakers and you're doing a lot of different things, but I think that's also hurt Utah in the fact that they haven't had that consistency. They haven't had, okay, we can trust Mikey Matthews every single week to be the Britton Covey type player, and we know he's going to do this, you know, Landon King or Jaquindon Jackson. This is where Utah's at. And so if Sione Vaki is that guy that is the most consistent of them, you've got to play him, right? Like, even if it's just for a few snaps, just to get him some. So I don't know that it's a long-term strategy or if this is just a play-it-week-to-week situation with Kyle. I'm a little confused why he went so far the other way in saying that it's kind of set, but, yeah. You know, teach their own.
You know, part of the and look, they're 6-2, and with the amount of injuries that they've had all over the field, you know, to be 6-2, even if you're not out of the Pac-12 championship game mix, but you would need a lot of help. The fact that they're 6-2 with the amount of stuff that's gone on is like sort of remarkable, but where we're headed now, you know, the part of the postscript of this season is going to be like not just rising and not just the quarterback stuff, but like the inconsistency of the offense and the inability to like really figure it out just too many times. You know, you look at the two losses. I mean, Oregon was a complete bulldozer. I don't know that any sort of real offensive output was going to solve things that day. But like against Oregon State, you played enough defense. You played more than enough defense. And if you had had any semblance of an offense that night, that was like the Oregon State game was like the real, real depths of like the offensive struggles between Nate Johnson and Bryson Barnes. You know, yeah, like a big part of the postscript of this season, no matter how it ends, is just the inconsistency on offense and the inability to like get anything positive going. And yeah, some of that's the injuries and some of that is guys have not produced. And you know, for that reason, like that part starts with the quarterback, the inability to produce.
Well, and the crazy thing is if Utah could just have a mediocre offense this year, they very well could be close to maybe not undefeated, but at least 7-1.
I think probably 7-1 with a mediocre offense.
Exactly. And you know, saying mediocre sounds harsh, but if you look at it, Utah is like 120th. I haven't looked at the most recent.
Now, you could say it. Okay. It's bad.
It is.
If you were mediocre, it's bad. You know, I have a story talking about the QB situation, specifically with Brandon Rose up on KSL.com this morning. And like I was looking at some numbers. It's the 120th ranked passing offense in the FBS, and those numbers are only that good. It's like 150 or 158 or 59 passing yards per game, and that number and that 120th ranking, it's only that high because you put up 34 on Cal and you move the ball, and you put 34 up on USC and Bryson Barnes had it going. If those two games hadn't have happened, you're closer to the basement than you already are. It's been a We can say it. It's fine. It's been a bad year for Utah's offense, and it's been a bad year for quarterback play at Utah in the middle of will Rising return? Won't he? What's the injury? October 5th, he like drops this bombshell revelation of like what the knee injury was. He's now taking a medical redshirt. The quarterback situation in Utah has been a mess. No other way to put it.
No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing is, you're closer to the service academies in terms of passing as you are to anybody else.
That's not a compliment, guys.
It is not.
Not a compliment.
And I understand, you know, some of these programs are trying to be better at passing and doing stuff, but it's not. Like, there's 133 FBS teams. Utah's 120th. Like, that's not anywhere where Utah wants to be. And let's not kid ourselves, right? Like, Utah's never been a prolific passing team. Like, even under Rising, they still haven't been like all of a sudden in the top 10 or anything like that.
No.
They're far higher than that, though. I think last year they were in the top 30, actually. So it's been much better than what it is. I'd have to go back and look at the stats and see. But this is a team that if they had consistent offense in just a mediocre level, that Oregon State game is a completely different game. Because like you said, that defense did everything they needed to. So look, we're not going to rehash everything there, but the point being made, look, you still have to be able to have some sort of competency going forward, whether it's Arizona State, which I know a lot of people are just kind of penciling in as a win. That's not an easy win. I mean, Arizona State is still a tough opponent, and they're kind of
DRA cycles. I mean, to have it as a win, but it's probably not the, like, the automatic, like, we're covering the 11.5 type of game that, like,
no.
I'm guilty. No, I was just going to say, like, I'm guilty. Like, for a while, I thought, you know, that they would roll over Arizona State no matter who the quarterback was. But then you look at it a little closer, and it's like, yeah, Utah should get out of there with a win, but it might be a little harder than we all want to admit. But, you know, you talk about how, you know, Utah has never exactly been like quarterback U, and they're not slinging the ball all over the place generally. That is true. But, you know, you've written this, I've written this, like, as Kyle Whittingham has gotten older, credit to him, he's been willing to, like, shift with the times.
Yeah.
And look, he's a big analytics guy, which was not the case 10 years ago, 12 years ago. He's not naive. Like, he knows there's a quarterback problem. He knows that this team is not operating at full bore given the quarterback situation. And yeah, he wishes the Rising thing had turned out differently. But this is where he is. And I don't want to say that Kyle Whittingham is, like, resigned to, like, dealing with his quarterback situation, but he kind of is, because, like, this is where he is. This is who's in the room. He thinks Bryson Barnes gives them the best chance to win, which right now I completely agree with.
He does,
and
yeah.
This is where it is.
Well,
that's it.
You know, you look back over the tenure of Kyle Whittingham, and he's had some good quarterbacks, but there hasn't, outside of Cam and maybe some others, there hasn't been a great quarterback in his tenure, right? Like, you can look at Brian Johnson, and you can look at some of these other quarterbacks, and Brian Johnson is great, so don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying that. But in recent tenure, there hasn't been anybody that has been overwhelming this star, right? Cam came in, and he was the guy that Kyle has always kind of been attracted to as a quarterback and knew that he was going to be somebody. But outside of that, there really hasn't been anybody. And that's been the hard mark for Whittingham. He's been able to do that without a consistent quarterback that is going to light up the game, right? He's done it with a running game. He's done it with, you know, a decent offense that way. This is just who Utah is. Now, obviously, he's trying to get away from that. Like, he's trying to find the quarterback that's going to work, but this is just where Utah's going to be at if they can't find that guy. That's where a lot of teams are, right? Like, the elite teams in this country have an elite quarterback, right? Like, that's just where it is. Like, you can't shy away from that. If you want to be a college football playoff contender, and I mean, like, you're contending for the actual championship, you know, next year, where, you know, we just talked about Utah being a college football playoff contender next year, and they absolutely will be, and I think they will based on whoever is under center next year. But with that being said, for them to be an actual contender at the, you know, semifinals or finals spot, they have to have an elite quarterback or somebody that understands the game at a higher level than what Utah's been able to produce right now. And that's just where it's at. Like, you can go into Arizona and you can be Arizona State, I mean, and you can be happy that you're playing a team that probably is, you know, outmatched in every single category than, you know, whatever that may be. But for Utah to take that next step and, you know, whatever that next step is for them, they have to find somebody. And maybe that's Rising next year. Maybe that's, you know, whatever. Maybe it's Brandon Rose. Who knows? We really don't know. But they have to be able to find somebody to do that, to give Utah what they need to. And unfortunately, they just haven't been there. And this is part of the problem of where they're at. We're talking about 120th passing offense because Utah hasn't been able to find a way to get a quarterback that is consistent enough. And I understand they thought Cam Rising was coming back, but that's just the problem that they've been at, right? Like, they haven't been able to figure out that spot more than any other position.
You know, and we sort of touched on this on Tuesday. And again, I've got this Brandon Rose thing up now. I get into it a little deeper, but if you are Kyle Whittingham, you would welcome back Rising for a seventh year immediately.
100%.
With a red carpet, anything he wants, get the NIL situation straightened out. There are some, it's a small minority of fans, but there are fans who believe that Utah should move on from Rising because it's been agita and a headache and nonsense this season.
It has.
It's been, and even for, like, us, it's been aggravating, but like these are your options. Like, Rising comes back as a seventh year senior in year six under Andy Ludwig going into a new conference, or Rising leaves and you're left figuring it out between Brandon Rose, who has not taken a collegiate snap, Nate Johnson, who hasn't started. We can do this Bryson Barnes thing.
He has started. He just hasn't been great.
He just hasn't been. Oh, what did I say? He hasn't started.
Yeah, no, you're good. Started, I knew what you were saying, but
it's been subpar. We can do this Bryson Barnes thing again next fall. I don't think anybody wants to do that. Or you hit the portal where, yeah, you're taking a shot on a 1 or 2 year rental. If those are your options, yeah, I think you want Rising back for a seventh year. But you know, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. But those are the options.
Yeah, barring a transfer quarterback coming in, if Rising doesn't come back, I don't know that Utah is any better than they are right now. Maybe, you know, they're going to be not better, really. But like, I don't know that much. I mean, you've still got somebody that
there's
hasn't had
so
a lot
much
of play.
Uncertainty. There's so many questions. Like, you need to go into spring knowing what the deal is. And if you go without Rising, you've got a lot of questions. Even if you hit the portal for somebody who's, you know, super accomplished, there's still going to be questions there. So I think, you know, I think everybody should be hoping that, you know, that the incumbent guy, you know, returns healthy and is engaged and, you know, and wants to play a seventh year.
To bring this full circle, I'm just going to put my ballot in for Sione Vaki to be the quarterback next year.
Direct snap him 35 times a game? I mean, that's can he throw it? I have no idea.
I don't know. Who cares? Let's just go the triple option, wing T, you know, let's just go out and, I mean, that why hasn't Utah done that, right? Like, just go for it.
I just got a shiver down my spine of, like, covering small New Jersey public school, high school football, these, like, group 1A type schools running, like, the triple option or the wing T because the quarterback is, like, 5'8", and that's just what it is.
Oh, I honestly would not be great. Curious to see what Whittingham could do with the triple option. I think he could do really well with it.
I think he has enough athletes where I can't. Wow, we're really off the rails now, folks. I mean, I think he has enough athletes and enough capable runners that, like, I don't think they would embarrass themselves. But in this day and age, you need to be throwing the ball. Yeah. Unless you're a service academy who just goes on 19 play drives for 54 yards and somehow scores. I don't know.
I'd be curious to see what happens, but it's not going to happen. Kyle's not embracing the wing T offense anytime soon.
We're just joking, guys.
Nope. You heard it first. Sources said Kyle.
Yeah, sources say.
All right. Well, one other thing, and it's the old cliche that, you know, everybody says is don't let Oregon beat you twice. This is kind of the real danger territory for Utah. They haven't had these types of games over the last few years. Early on in the Pac-12, I think Utah very much so was in danger of that because they'd get really high for a game and, you know, go play USC or go play Oregon and win or lose. Well, I guess in this case lose, they would then lose a bad game to like an Arizona State in the next week. I don't necessarily fear for Utah in this game, but I'm not ruling it out either. Right, it's going to be a much more of a letdown in emotion based on what took place last week. You had College Game Day, you had Oregon, which is always, you know, it's always going to be a good opponent. And as we've talked about, Utah has always used Oregon as kind of like the benchmark of where they can be, and they, you know, clearly they still have places to go. But I think you now get a team that many are predicting to not be very good. But you got to remember, even though Arizona State has nothing to play for in the postseason because they are literally ineligible to play in the postseason, that makes them a very dangerous team because you've got kids that are out there doing everything they can to put tape out there to be able to do that to move forward to the next level. Or maybe they're going to the transfer portal, or maybe they're just trying to stay on Arizona State. They're doing everything they can to claim their spot. That is a very dangerous spot for Utah going into this game. You know, you don't want to turn one loss at Rice-Eccles Stadium into two. You don't want this to be a close game, but there is a real danger there. I think that's something that Utah has to avoid.
Yeah, I don't really foresee that. Just like talking to some guys on Monday, like a veteran guy like Devon Vaile, you know, laid it out pretty clearly that, you know, you have the game that they absorbed against Oregon on Saturday and it was bad and you're feeling down, but like that's what Sunday's for. Sunday is, you know, rest and recovery, maybe some film and like get your head straight, and when you walk back in the building on Monday to deal with a new opponent, you know, you have that previous game you know, behind you. And look, that's, you know, those are words. You know, we'll see what happens, you know, really when they play this game on Saturday. But I mean, if you look back at the last, you know, 4 or 5 seasons, Utah has been, you know, pretty good coming off a loss. You know, just in the last couple of seasons, in 21, they lose at Oregon State. You know, they turn around and they get a win the next week. Last season, they, you know, they lost at UCLA in a game that they were dominated in. You come back and you start slowly against USC, but you have that giant second half and, you know, rising loss of mind and through for 415. So they've been good. You know, this veteran group, the guys that have been here 3, 4, 5 years, they're good coming off a loss. So you would think that that will continue. Now, the vibes at Rice-Eccles Saturday are going to be, you know, bad, right? It's a noon kickoff. You can pretty much bank that the place will not be technically full, no matter what they announce. You know, just an early start. You know, the place is not going to be full. It's going to be a little weird. So, you know, don't discount, you know, the kind of early kickoff and things that come along with that. But again, you know, veteran group, they've been through this before. This isn't like a new phenomenon. They certainly haven't been beaten as badly as they got beat by Oregon. But yeah, I would expect this veteran group to show up to, you know, to play a football game on Saturday. And look, maybe it's ugly. I forgot the score I picked on the KSL pick'em. I think I went a little higher than I intended. I think this is going to be a low scoring game, and it could be ugly, which is fine. Like that, you know, those happen too. But you need to be prepared to show up to play a football game.
Yeah, and I think another thing at play here, and I don't necessarily think it'll happen, is Utah overlooking them for Washington. I think if there was more to play for Utah, I think maybe that could be a scenario. But I just don't see this team as being that. Like they're so focused on themselves in terms of they know they haven't been perfect that I don't think they're looking at it as saying, okay, you know, who cares about Arizona State? We're moving to Washington, right? Like, this is a team very much so introspective and trying to look at what their flaws and problems have been, that there has been a lot of self-introspection that way, right? Like, they're not worried about what other teams are. And yeah, you can get some of that looking forward and saying Washington, but I think based on how that Oregon game went, I don't think people are looking forward to Washington, quite honestly. So I think that's just the nature of where it's at, right? And, this isn't anything crazy. This isn't, you know, this is football, right? And Kyle's going to get his guys up and do whatever he needs to. So only one other thing that I just think is kind of funny, more or less, is Kyle basically challenging college football teams to come at him with stealing signs. I mean, he's gone in hard. He's leaned in hard with this sign stealing. You know, if you haven't been paying attention, Michigan is being accused of creating a – maybe not necessarily from the top down in terms of Jim Harbaugh down to, you know, his lackeys. But there's been a staffer who has gone to many games and he's gone in person and recorded the signs of opponents for Michigan. And Michigan has used these. But the question was, you know, did Michigan use these knowing that he stole them or was it just some other means? There's a lot going on there and we don't need to get into that. That's not this podcast, but Kyle's been asked a couple times about sign stealing and Lincoln Riley kind of accused Whittingham of stealing USC signs, but Whittingham is leaning into it. He says, you know what, if you get your sign stolen in the game, that's on you because they were too simple. He'd also on Monday said, if you want to steal our signs, go for it. Like that to me is just like a guy that says, bring it on. I love it. It's just kind of funny to me.
Yeah. I mean, I've spent a lot of time talking about how in a media setting, Kyle is like generally very even keeled, not too high, not too low, but he kind of went off script on that one. And hey, he was pretty adamant that if you want to try to steal Utah's signs, that's fine. And that just means that we would have to adjust what we're doing. And look, you know, this came up on Monday with Kyle, not solely because of what Lincoln Riley said. And I don't think Lincoln Riley was like accusing Kyle Whittingham of stealing signs. He was just kind of making a point that Utah does try to swipe signs, which is above board in an in-game
it's legal.
Situation.
It's completely legal.
Yeah, completely legal. This came up on Monday because Oregon was using a screen on the sideline to try to hide their signs. And that I'm told that is something that Oregon generally does anyway, but be that as it may, this probably shouldn't be a thing at Utah, but it kind of turned into a thing. And yeah, I was taken aback a bit by, you know, by Kyle's answer to it. And with that little bit of, you know, raised voice, sort of semi-aggression that he does not use at all with the media. But yeah, I mean, his point is valid. Like if your sideline signs are weak enough where they're being poached and stolen, as Kyle said, that's on you. That's on you to protect your signs or make your signs more difficult to decipher or whatever it may be. I'm hoping we can move past this from a Utah perspective, because it's not really a thing. I was happy to write it, but it's just not a thing. Like it's a thing in the general sense of college football at the moment, because you have this Michigan situation and now it's threatening to derail a potential national championship run. But from a Utah perspective, like, okay, like Lincoln Riley said what he said. The best part to me as a journalism nerd of what Lincoln Riley said is you had a number of sites like incorrectly but aggregating it and putting a headline on it in a manner of Lincoln Riley is accusing
exactly
Kyle Whittingham of cheating, essentially. So I could go on a really long diatribe about the state of sports journalism, but I'm not going to. That was my favorite part, is that just the way it was aggregated by certain websites was reckless and irresponsible.
And I could jump on there with you and talk about it, because it frustrates me. But the irony of all of this with sign stealing is years and years ago, early stages of the Pac-12, Kyle Whittingham accused, I think it was Todd Graham, of stealing signs and was really pissed off. I think there was.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
There was. I can't remember what it was, but there was something. I think it was the Arizona State game. I'm trying to remember what year, but they felt like they couldn't do anything because Arizona State had everything from Utah, and it really pissed off Kyle Whittingham. And so, like, I almost wonder if that kind of changed his philosophy of things, and it really kind of changed what he did, and that's why it's now to a level where he's just like, come, bring it on, right? Like, I'm now at a stage where it's like, if you want to steal my signs, go for it. But it is kind of interesting to kind of go back on that, and when he said that comment, it kind of brought it back to me, and I'd have to go back and figure out, you know, what he said, but just kind of interesting how that shifted. And I think when you feel confident about where you're at and where you're at as a program, I think that's why Kyle feels confident, right? Like, you can steal my signs, but we're still going to beat you, basically.
You know what they could do is, you know, college football and the NCAA could grow up and act like the NFL and just put the little radio in the quarterback's helmet, and you could send signals from wherever and get rid of the signs.
College football doesn't grow up. Solved,
but that, what'd you say?
College football doesn't grow up, man.
No, it never does. It just makes too much sense.
Somebody did say,
you know,
like,
to solve this,
that they now have those armbands that all the players have that they have the play calls on, especially the quarterback. They said that they now have some LED ones where the coach can call the play out and the players just look at it and it flashes for like 5 seconds or so.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be fantastic technology, because then you don't have to worry about, you know, headpieces that don't work. I know in the NFL, if it doesn't work for one team, then both teams can't use it, which seems kind of
right.
You know, frustrating, but
sure.
You know, I'd be interested to see what happens. And then does hacking come into play? And does, you know, I mean, there's so many things.
Please stop. You're giving me a headache.
Well, let's get off of this. Anyways, that's football. Look, we're not gonna talk about Arizona State too much. And, you know, maybe we're overlooking them, but you know, there's just too much happening at this time of the year that I honestly don't care. And I'm sorry if you do. So you're not getting that from us today.
He is the host, folks. So that's what we're going with.
Yeah, that's right. So let's move to basketball, because everybody's excited about basketball, right? Where's the
I'm
curtains?
Excited about basketball.
Where's the curtains? I'm just kidding. Anyways, Utah men's basketball and women's basketball both had their final exhibition games of the season this week. Both won. I mean, the women's absolutely destroyed. They almost won by 100 points. That's just the difference between their program right now and the men's program. But there's a lot of optimism from both of these teams. Any overarching themes that you got, maybe especially from the men's, since that happened last night?
Yeah, so just to be clear, neither one of us were at this men's exhibition last night. We had some personal stuff to attend to, and it was not streamed. So you're left with kind of the box score, and I texted a couple of people this morning just to try to get a vibe. I think, you know, throughout preseason, there's been a pretty healthy optimism that Cole Bajma, right, the transfer from Washington, is going to fill like a real need that they've been missing, just like a knockdown shooter, like a knockdown shooter from all over the gym, and a veteran guy of two Power Five programs. He was at Michigan before Washington, former top 100 kid, brings a veteran presence to the room and a hell of a shooter that they, while Gabe Mattson is terrific, Bajima does more than what Gabe Mattson does in terms of, you know, shooting and some of the intangible stuff. And then the one thing that, you know, that we should point out, you know, we spent a lot of time last season talking with Craig Smith about a potential big lineup between Brandon Carlson and Kaba Keita that never really came to fruition. But now you've got Carlson and Lawson Lovering, who's a 7-foot sophomore transfer from Colorado. Those two started last night in the front court. And the situation within that situation is that if you have two guys that big on the floor at the same time, you have to have one of them willing and comfortable to guard the four, which means you're going to be, you know, floating out and veering out to the perimeter if you're playing a pretty athletic stretch four. So Brandon Carlson is essentially learning how to play power forward. He's been a center his entire life. Again, it's a bit of an experiment. I don't know that you see that lineup in the opener, at least not immediately on Monday night against Eastern Washington. But Craig Smith is comfortable enough with Carlson and Lovering on the floor at the same time that he was willing to experiment last night against Westminster. So I think a lot of optimism coming out of that game last night. Again, it's an exhibition. Take it with a grain of salt. Nothing's perfect. But I think the people that I talked to this morning were feeling pretty good about where the team was coming out of that exhibition last night.
And I think the thing that Craig really talked about coming into the season was depth and shooting. And you saw a lot of that, right? Like, you saw a lot of the shooting. They were much better there. And once again, it's Westminster, so you got to take that with a grain of salt. But the three top scorers were all transfers to the program, guys that are coming in and are going to provide natural depth to the program. You got Cole Bajima, Hunter Erickson, and Lawson Lovering. That's great, right? Like, you've got proven guys with Brandon Carlson and Gabe Mattson. You know what those two can do. But the fact that you've got three other guys that could just immediately step in and be the guy, that really helps this team. So I don't think you can take a ton from this game, but I think this is kind of the optimism for this team is you have a bunch of talent that can shoot. Last year, you know, you had Gabe Mattson go out and Utah was done, right? They could key in on Brandon Carlson. Mm-hmm. They knew they could double team him. You weren't going to get anything out of pretty much anybody else outside of some sporadic stuff, but you weren't going to get a guy that was going to take over the game and change it because you could just double team another guy. This, I think Utah's going to be a little bit better where they can at least have some depth, right? At least on your starting five, you've got some depth. Ben Carlson sounds like he's coming along as well, and they believe that he can be another guy that can kind of not quite stretch the floor, but at least give you another weapon on the floor that he wasn't last year. And so you're getting guys that are starting to develop, and maybe as Utah goes into this final season of the Pac-12, maybe they can compete and get into that upper half of the conference. Maybe even, I don't want to say still, but get one of those top four bids and do well in the Pac-12 tournament. I think this, we've talked about this, this is the year where Craig kind of has to take that next step, right? These are all his guys, essentially. This is his recruiting classes. This is his transfers. These are the people that he's built. If he can't do it then, it's only going to get more difficult next year when you go to the Big 12. So I think there's optimism there. I think you should be optimistic from that vantage point, not get too serious about it, but at least you've got something to look forward to.
Yeah, and the schedule is, again, you know, you've kind of crafted a non-conference schedule that is conducive to what you think you have on your roster. So, look, it's not a bunch of world beaters, but look, Eastern Washington, UC Riverside, you'll get two early at home. Your MTE includes Wake Forest and Houston. Houston's going to be a Big 12 power pretty immediately, you know, coming from the American. And then, you know, playing at St. Mary's, you're playing BYU. So, again, it's a mix of games that you should win along with some games that you'll be tested in. You know, if they were better, if they were a little further along with this roster, maybe you schedule a little harder. But I've given Craig credit in the past for scheduling smartly, and I think he scheduled smartly again based on what he believes he has in his locker room.
Yeah, I think this sets up really well for Utah, at least on paper. And you know, we'll see what it is. But On the women's side of things, I mean, this is a stacked team, right? They also are trying to add depth, but in a different way. Utah returns essentially at starting five. There's some that can kind of move in and out, but they've got their starting five, and they've added some depth with Maddie Wilkie. They've got this Reese Ross. She was actually their leading scorer on Monday, had 25 points. You know, you still have Alyssa Peely, Gianna Neepkins, Jenna Johnson. I mean, there's a lot of talent on this team, and I think the real big test is going to be when they play South Carolina in that neutral game that we've talked about. So this is a fun opportunity for Utah basketball collectively moving forward this year. I think there's going to be a lot of fun games. I think there's a lot more optimism surrounding where these programs are at. Obviously, the women's basketball program is going to be much more in the mix of being a national title contender, so you'll want to watch that. So they do have a doubleheader to start the season on Monday. Utah women's basketball starts at 4 p.m. They will be playing Mississippi Valley State, and the men's will start at 7:30 at Eastern Washington. So I don't know what the ticket arrangements are with that and how it all works. I'm sure you could call your ticket people and talk, but I know, you know, it's at least going to be some fun. The fact that basketball season is here is still a little kind of jarring to me, even though we're in November, but it's here.
It always is, my friend.
It's here. So yeah. Anything else from that?
No, you know, again, no free ads on this podcast, but you know, if you're thinking about checking out the women's basketball team, like you have young kids, you're trying to get them into the sport. The women's team at Utah honestly plays like a very like fan friendly, up and down, shooting a lot of threes brand of basketball. There's going to be a lot of scoring. And in these early games, when they're playing overmatched competition, there's going to be a lot of scoring. There's going to be a lot of players playing. It's worth checking out, especially if you have young children trying to introduce them to the sport. I think that's a good avenue to start with if you're at least thinking about it.
Yep. And one thing that is actually happening today is Utah men's basketball is expected to get the commitment from Jackson Johnson. Are we going to go with that? Are we going to say that? You and I have both heard that.
Yeah. I thought you were going off script. Yeah, it's 11:35 on Thursday morning, and I am pretty solid that Jackson Johnson is going to commit to Utah and Craig Smith later this afternoon. And you know, you think back briefly to the high school recruiting that Craig has done. This is probably one of the more significant high school gets. One, because he's a player, okay, and he's a Power Five level kid. But you're also going in state to Alta High School, but more specifically, more importantly, you're going into the Utah Prospects AAU program, and you're pulling out one of those kids, right? They play on the Adidas circuit. It's the only sneaker sponsored program in the state of Utah. So going into that program and pulling out a kid, that is a pretty significant piece of forward progress for Craig in terms of high school recruiting.
Yeah. By the time you're hearing this, it's probably already happened that he's announced that he's going to Utah, but this is a big win. I mean, this is partly been some of the criticism against Craig Smith is he hasn't been able yet to kind of get those guys in the high school recruiting. There's been a lot of complaints that he hasn't been able to do some of that stuff. And so to be able to kill two birds with one stone with it being a Utah player as well as somebody of his high level. I mean, I know recruiting services are going to have him at different, but he's essentially a four-star small forward.
Yeah.
This is a great pickup for Utah, and we'll see what happens. But this is where Craig has to be. If he wants to continue to compete and he wants to continue to move forward with this stuff, this is where he has to live. And, you know, maybe this is the first of many for Utah. We'll see. I don't want to put too much into one recruit, and we have to see what he does when he gets to Utah. But this is definitely a win for Utah, and obviously something that they've needed for quite a while.
Yeah, and if I'm reading my roster projection correctly, I've not looked at this in a while. I believe that would be 13 scholarships booked for 24, 25. Don't quote me on that. It might actually be 12, but it's at least 12. And if it's 12, they have room to add one more for 24, 25.
Yeah. So this will be good. I mean, they've got some space. So
yeah.
Yeah. But that's it for us today. We'll come back at you on probably Tuesday after we recap the Arizona State game, and things will continue to get more interesting as the season develops. Once again, Utah's still technically in play for a Pac-12 championship, so this game does matter for them, and we will do our best to kind of tell you where things are as it all plays out. So with that, signing off. Have a great one.
Later, guys.